Welcome to Center Stage, everyone. Thank you so much for sticking and staying with us. Of course, Center Stage is all things arts and entertainment. We just believe you ought to know about it. And we have a great night tonight with some guests, some that I know and some that I don't know. Well, let me tell you all about the History Theater, who is presenting a show called The Defeat of Jesse James. The Defeat of Jesse James. It's a new musical theater escapade by the team and brought you, the team that brought you Glenn Sheen. A lot of people had a chance to see that and they loved it, Jonathan. Now, The Defeat of Jesse James is at the History Theater. It's playing right now through May 28th at the History Theater. All you have to do is go to historytheater.com to learn more. However, joining me to talk about it is Adam Qualls. He plays Jesse James. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing great, Geraldine. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's so great to have you join us tonight. You know, people are always enamored with Jesse James. The story just consistently stays on our mind and in our hearts from time to time, right? And to know that this is now at the History Theater called Defeat of Jesse James, well, that piques your interest. So tell us about the name of it, Defeat of Jesse James.
The Defeat of Jesse James. The title really comes from the main plot point in the show, which is his attempted raid on the First National Bank of Northfield, Minnesota. It's part of History Theater's mission to tell Minnesota stories. And
yeah, they're doing a great job of it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes. And the Minnesota connection with Jesse James is that he and his gang in 1876 attempted a robbery up north in Northfield, Minnesota, and was basically run out of town. They failed. And it was the beginning of the end of his criminal career. So I think that's it's a great source of pride for the folks in Northfield. And also, you know, in our play, it's presented as a sort of farewell concert that Jesse is putting on for himself to sort of cement his legacy in the annals of history.
Interesting. And,
yes. And as play goes on, his version of the story sort of gets taken away from him piece by piece. Because, of course, as we know, well, as we might not know, Jesse's past was very troubled and dark, and the sort of Robin Hood legend that surrounds him is really just mythology. He was originally from Missouri, and mm-hmm. during the Civil War growing up, which was a border state, and he was on the southern side. And, you know, he had a lot of resentment against the North during the war and during the Reconstruction phase after right. the war. And, you know, his life of crime really wasn't this Robin Hood fairy tale that was spun in the press at the time and lived on for generations afterward.
Right.
He was really just a criminal.
So here we are talking about it. Yeah. We've talked about Jesse James so many times, right? Books have been written about it. Right. But this particular piece is the world premiere. And how is it different from the stories we already know? Is the truth about Jesse James in this particular piece, or have they taken some of the ideas that have come up in this piece and just made it really special? In fact, I understand that the book was by Jeffrey Hatcher, and the music and lyrics are by Chan Poling. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yes, it is. Yes. And they are a dynamic duo of a writing team. This is their fourth show, I believe, that they've written together. Well, I think they wrote a fifth one, but it was never produced. But okay. So this is the fourth one that's made it to the stage. And I believe I am the only actor to have been in opening night of all four of those shows.
Oh, wow. So hey, now.
Yes, I have the great pleasure of being very familiar with their work and how and their kind of rhythm as writers. And, of course, there are some literary artistic liberties taken, as there have to be in any That's dramatic right. work. Mm-hmm. But as Jeff told us on in an early rehearsal, you know, this isn't meant to be the definitive cradle to grave story of Jesse James. This is a look at the story from where we're at in 2023. And it's certainly not the first telling and probably won't be the last.
So tell me about the director. I know him, Richard D. Thompson. And I'm just curious to know how Richard, the new artistic director is Richard D. Thompson. I'm just curious to know if he was the one that started suggesting some changes in this story that would pique other people's interest.
Yes. As I understand it, the first workshop of this show was in 2020 during the pandemic, and it's gone through a lot of drafts since then. I came on board about a year ago in the workshop that they held last summer, and Rick had not taken over as artistic director yet, but I believe that he was the one that really encouraged Jeff and Chan to keep going, because they were just running into a lot of roadblocks. I know this word is thrown around a lot, but there's a lot of problematic politics surrounding Jesse and his myth and his history. And they kept coming up throughout the workshop phase, but Rick was really the one that encouraged them to keep going. And this was a story worth being told. And so there have been, even from the workshop that I did a year ago, it's a completely different script now than the one we started with.
That's how it works, man, when you're creating a brand new piece. But it must be exciting for you to play this role.
It is. It was daunting at first. For the sheer amount of lines to learn, and also, and playing someone who did a lot of really bad things, but as Rick told us in the rehearsal process, we can disagree with what he did, but we can also try to understand where he was coming from when he did those things.
Do we have to? You know, and I understand why that piece is in there, but people really love to know Jesse James. And when it gets to be, you know, a little too much, then people say, no, take me back to the dirty dude, you know, and let's really promote that. So I'm curious to know, how do you move? And this is my last question. How do you move between these movements in this particular piece? Does your voice change? Is there something about you that has to change depending on where you are in the piece?
Depending on where I am in the piece, you know, that's a good question. It's really kind of a ride. It's really, you know, I get on at the beginning and act one, I never leave the stage. And, but I just figured out a voice that I'm going to use. I'm also from Missouri, so I just use the sort of good old boy accent that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And then the musical numbers there are a couple of more traditional musical theater songs, but a lot of it is country and blues and rock and roll, which was really exciting for me because I'm a theater actor. And so most of my work has been, singing work has been in musical theater. So to be able to kind of explore these different registers of my voice has been a real challenge and a real, really fulfilling treat.
Well, I sure wish you well on this. I think it's going to be quite remarkable. It's going to really surprise people. Some people say what we can say with certainty is that whatever Jesse James was, everything changed when he and his gang rode into Northfield, Minnesota on September 7th, 1876, which is why the show is called The Defeat of Jesse James. Nuff said. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Adam. And if people want more information, where do they go?
They can go to historytheater.com. The show runs until May the 28th. Yeah.
Yep. And they usually have some discounted tickets for students and patrons under 30 years old. So definitely give them, check them out. You can call 651-292-4320. Thank you so much for joining us, Adam Qualls.
Thanks, Sherilyn.
All right. Take care. You have a great show.
Oh, thanks so much.
All right, everyone. Coming up next, Marilyn May. Stay tuned. It is now 9:22 here at WCCO. I'm so excited about my next guest. I've had a chance to meet with her, to even sit near her and talk to her. She is really quite a remarkable woman. Some people may call today May Day, May Day, because legendary singer is celebrating her 95th birthday and Mother's Day with six shows. That's right, six shows at Crooners in Fridley, and that's May 11th through the 14th. Now, who other than legendary jazz and cabaret singer Marilyn May is still working on her 95th birthday. Welcome, Marilyn May. It's so great to have you join us.
Hi, Marilyn. I'm so glad to speak with you. We have met, huh?
We have met. I've been to two or three of your shows at Crooners. We had a chance. You were sitting at the bar one night, and I sat two seats away from you, and you just smiled.
That's after the show.
Yes.
Designate after the show, please.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I was just thinking about Tony Bennett, who, the legendary singer who retired from the stage in 2021 at the age of 95. And some people may look at you and see how fabulous you are, and others may sit and go, when is she going to retire? Why do we have to retire? I don't understand that.
That's not in my vocabulary. I don't even know what that word means. I just did a concert at Carnegie Hall. March 24th, and with an 80 piece orchestra, the New York Pops orchestra with 80 musicians behind me, and we did 2 hours and a 2 hour concert. And it was thrilling. We had 3,000 people there. And all of that just made me, no, I will never retire.
I'm the same way, by the way. I am with you on that. I am not going to Someone has to be responsible to tell
singer.
Me when I'm done.
You're a singer. I know. Where's
yes,
your next
ma'am.
Gig?
Oh, my gosh. Several are coming up. And I also MC and do so much more. And you do way more than what I do. I don't know how you do it and still look so fabulous. I wish I could get into every outfit you wear because you're fabulous.
Thank you, sweetheart.
We are excited that you're back.
Mr. Mackey, Bob Mackey is my friend. And he gifted me with a whole new outfit for the second half. I wore something that I had of his for the first half of that comedy concert. And then he had another one made with, I had to fly out to Palm Springs to get fittings for it. And then I flew back about 4 days before I opened. And so thank you for that. I'm very proud of what I wear because I think Mr. Mackey is a genius.
Well, I wish every young person that is just starting their careers singing, I wish they could see you because you really have a history in your eyes and heart, yet everything about you seems young. Are you still kicking that leg up over your, right at your shoulder? Oh, my goodness.
Of course, they expect that. Although I must say these days I do put three fingers on the piano just to hold on. I didn't used to have to hold on, but now I do. But all of that goes with the song called It's Today, Jerry Herman wrote a wonderful song for Mame, and I did the part of Mame some years ago, and that song really does tell it like I think it life should be. Every day is important, and
every day is
a new day. Every single day you're active and you do what you do. I teach a lot. I have people that want to, some people play golf, some people play bridge. I know a lot of people that love to sing and they want to do a performance. They're here in New York. I'm in New York right now. So I set acts for them. I do the arrangements and teach them. And that keeps me busy when I'm not doing places like Crooners. I'm so thrilled about being back at Crooners because this is our, we do usually twice a year in that wonderful place. And Mary T, of course.
Oh, of course. So as we look at your future, right? Some people will say ageism right now is really a problem. Some people, young people, will look at that and go, oh, you know, this person is too old and maybe they should stop. Here's the thing. If you are still gifting your gift to all of us, then that is what we should be paying attention to. And I'm so grateful that you're doing that. And it inspires me to continue to do that, right? I just turned 65, right? So I'm just fine getting older.
You're in your prime. That's really in your prime. And then you realize when you get to your 90s, you'll realize that's another prime. That'll be, you know, it's really wonderful because by this time, every lyric is so important and every story is important. And when you've lived this long, you understand those stories. And so it makes it easy to convey them to the audience.
Now, this is happening at Crooner's Lounge in Fritley. All you have to do is go to croonersloungemn.com to get tickets on Eventbrite. And, of course, this is on the main stage at Crooner's. I love the main stage, and I can't wait to see you there. I will come and see you again because
I want you to. We'll be there. What are the dates? Let me see. We open on the 11th of May, which is
the 14th.
Mm-hmm. And we do two shows on Friday and two shows on Saturday. And then on Mother's Day, I'm kind of glad to be not kind of, I'm thrilled to be there on Mother's Day because I hope, you know, we want to do an early show. So I hope a lot of the people will come that are celebrating Mother's Day. And even if you're not, it's a good place to be on a Sunday afternoon.
I'm sure you've been asked this question many times, and it's my last question. How do you keep the stamina? How is it that you perform as though you are 28 years old? How do you continue? What are you eating?
Well, I'm sure you can identify with this. You love what you do, and I do love what I do. I like the people, and I'm most appreciative that they are coming to hear what I do. And I'm hoping that they, you know, I'm always very honored when they say, you know, I didn't feel real good yesterday and today. And now tonight after your show, you know, after the show, they'll say, I feel so much better. And it's kind of therapy for, you know, all the Great American Songbook. It's all therapy for people that love the music and love singing and entertainment. So I'm grateful that I'm still able to do that and really having fun doing it.
Well, I love that you are back. And by the way, there are so many teenagers and young people that know of you and come to your shows, too. I remember the last show I saw you in, I looked around and went, wow, the parents and grandparents were bringing their grandchildren to the show.
Isn't that great? I love that. I'm so glad. I want them to really get acquainted with the Great American Songbook, the Cole Porter songs and the Jerry Herman songs and all that great material that maybe they haven't been exposed to, and it's really kind of a material. These wonderful songs is an invitation and an education for them. So you know, I'm always thrilled when there are kids, young people in the audience.
I know I said I had one question, but here's the last one. I promise. Have you written your memoirs?
No, I haven't. I don't have time right now.
Oh, I hope you will.
I'm too busy creating them.
There you go. So, well said.
So, yeah, that's it. You know, I'm really awfully busy. I can't sit down and write them. And although, you know, I do think the Carnegie appearance was a thrilling thing that happened, and we had people from all over the country. We had we sold out. There were over 3,000 people there.
Oh my goodness!
And they came from all over the country, old friends and people that have heard me for years came to that concert, and of course, you know, I come to I love Crooner's, and I come there twice a year. Mary's a wonderful lady that owns the place, and we just have a great time. And there's lots of singers that come, and it's kind of, you know, Minneapolis is quite a place for singers, right?
That's right, and we love it here. We really do, and we're grateful that you came. I also want to say to you that my siblings and I were
next time.
Oh, I hope so.
Thing for me.
I hope so, but I want you to know my siblings and I, we did Carnegie Hall. We sang at Carnegie Hall, and I'll never forget stepping in that magic circle right there in the middle. What did it feel like for you when you stepped into it?
That's fun. Well, I had done it twice with other singers, and it didn't feel foreign to me. And I kind of just, I did say at one point that this is a really lovely nightclub, isn't it? So we just turned it into a club, you know, into a little intimate cabaret.
Well, if you guys want to, if any of the listeners want to know a little bit more about Marilyn May, please go to her website at www.marilynmay.com. What a pleasure. And I will see you soon.
Thank you, Geraldine. I look forward to seeing you and hearing you. My
you
love
too.
To you.
My love to you. Good night.
Good night.
All right, everyone, we have one more guest coming up, and that is Rohan Preston, the lead theater critic for the Star Tribune. We'll be back. Welcome back to Center Stage, All Things Arts and Entertainment. And our last guest for this hour is Rohan Preston. As I just mentioned a moment ago, he's from the Star Tribune. In fact, he's the lead theater critic, and I love having him on. We always miss him when he's not here, but he's joining us tonight. How are you, Ro?
I'm wonderful, thank you. It's wonderful to hear your voice as well.
It's great to hear your voice, too. I have missed you, and I hear about you. You know, I run into people, and they'll say, yeah, you know, Ro is on your show sometimes, and I just saw him at the show such and such a day. So I'm just happy that you're back with me tonight. I got to start out asking you about the shows that young children, I would say between the ages of 10 and up, that they can see that a lot of the parents don't want them to see, like Hamlet. My 10-year-old granddaughter just the other day asked me about Hamlet. She's been seeing all of these signs on buses and all this kind of thing. And she says, Auntie, Grandmother, I really want to see Hamlet. Would you advise that at 10 years old?
I think that's a hard one. The short answer is no. You know, I think Hamlet may be too much for a 10-year-old.
I agree.
Yeah, the death scenes are pretty, you know,
yeah,
they're
pretty
moving.
Serious.
They're very moving, and so you know, it's a mixed thing. Sometimes and parents know their children better than we do, and they may have those conversations. My 10-year-old, I wouldn't take my 10-year-old to see that. So.
I agree with that. So then, if that's the case, when it comes to Shakespeare, what shows can a 10-year-old see?
Well, you know, I think certainly the comedies, you know, Romeo and Juliet, of course, is still kind of heavy as well.
Right.
But A Midsummer Night's Dream is always delightful for young people.
Yeah, that is true. My son played that at his high school, St. Thomas Academy. I'll never forget it. They put it underwater. I wonder why people take that particular piece and change it all the time. There he was, you know, under, you know, like a one of the fish or something like that. I can't remember what he was dressed like, but it was ridiculous, I can tell you that. And they take it and run with that particular play. Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah,
perfect. I will see if I can take her to that.
Yeah, that's a good one. And, you know, but I love the impulse, which is to, like, expose young people to this work and to have them own it and be at home in it, you know. Today I went to the Guthrie for their open house and celebration of their 60th anniversary, which is actually today. They were founded 1963 on May 7th is when they opened with Hamlet. And there was a tribute to Sheila Livingston, who brought a
yes.
lot of young people to the Guthrie.
Oh,
and
I was so sorry to hear of her loss.
All yeah. yeah, so... So it was really wonderful that we start this segment off talking about bringing Shakespeare, making Shakespeare available to young people, and making theater available to young people, because she so deeply believed in that, you know?
Here's what I don't understand. No matter how famous Shakespeare's works are, I get frustrated when I go to see a different iteration of one of the most famous ones, right? And I get really frustrated because people like to play around with it and change it a bit. And in some way, in my head and heart, I think that is a sin. It's like, you know, don't change it that much, right? And then there are other times where I see something that Shakespeare has written and I've seen it on a stage somewhere and I go, but this was really cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they measure that.
You know, and so I went back. I didn't see Hamlet again this weekend, but I went back and on Thursday, there was a group that I talked to before they saw it, and we brought the dramaturg out. And we had
nice.
Very question that you have, which is like, you know, like, how do you decide essentially to cut, you know, trim, what do you keep in? What? And the Guthrie, when it opened in 1963, the Hamlet lasted 4.5 hours. It was uncut. It was uncut.
And nobody got up to go to the restroom? Nothing? Really?
I know, but this Hamlet is about 2 hours and 2.5 hours plus intermission, you know?
Right.
So, that's a real question about, like, how do you do this? What choices do you make in terms of what characters to lose, what storylines to follow, what words from the past that maybe have taken on a different meaning today that you may not want to have. It's a rich, problematic and complicated project, frankly, because we keep these classics around because they're teaching us something, they're telling us something. On the other hand, sometimes, you know, we have to struggle or push through with some of the language or some of the concepts, some of the ideas, and certainly some of the characters. And one of the things too that's always a challenge is like, yeah, can we, if you're going to do Shakespeare, do all of it, and then, you know, are you going to be in the theater for 4.5 hours? You know?
Right. And, you know, I've been to long plays and it doesn't bother me when it's really just so powerful. But sometimes you look around the room, like at Orchestra Hall, they will take music and songs from these incredible pieces. And the children will be sitting there and whatever music is playing or if someone is singing the songs, and then you realize that you're talking about a piece that maybe the child should not see. but the parents have to make that decision. Right?
Exactly. And you know, I don't think there can be hard and fast rules about that because, you know, sometimes a 10-year-old may be fairly advanced
mature.
And the parents are able to have those discussions and, you know, and say, yeah, my child, and sometimes you know, a 13-year-old may not be ready. I don't know. I mean, it really depends, but I love the impulse, which is like, how do we immerse our young people in culture and show them all this different these different riches that they have,
right.
and say this is yours, this is your birthright, this is yours to take advantage of, to learn from, to grow in citizenship, to grow in your humanity, frankly, you know.
I have a granddaughter that can handle it, and I know that. At 10 years old, she can handle that. But that 5-year-old of mine, I don't want her to handle it. It's like, no, not yet. We know the children, right? We know our own children. We know the grandchildren. We know them. So, you know, you just kind of make that decision as quickly as you can because it's necessary.
And you know, in terms of the young people, I'm glad we're talking about them. An American Tale is at the Children's Theater.
Bravo.
It's fantastic. and really just heartwarming. It's a very clever show and obviously it's animated. It's about mice escaping cats in Russia, and then they get here and they're like, there are no cats in America, but there are cats in America. And so it's like they have to negotiate and live in a world of challenges and sometimes unfairness. And so It's a beautiful, beautiful show. The set is a suitcase. So imagine the whole play takes place in a musical takes place in a suitcase, and that metaphor of travel, of transportation, of moving your belongings and moving your, you know, what is your home? You know, is it something that, is it a place or is it something that you carry, you know?
So who put it together as a musical? Do you know?
Yes.
At the Children's, who wrote it to life?
Muckler and Mahler is a team. They're the composers. And Itamar Moses does the book or the story. And I don't want to mispronounce her name, but Magar, I don't want to mispronounce her name, but she it's directed, very well directed by this young director who is actually directed at Guthrie as well. I'm going to try it.
Are you going to try it? Because I just want you to know I try this stuff all the time. It does not work well for me. It doesn't. So go, sir. Go. You have the magic.
Her name is Tahibi Magal.
Welcome back to Center Stage, All Things Arts and Entertainment. And our last guest for this hour is Rohan Preston. As I just mentioned a moment ago, he's from the Star Tribune. In fact, he's the lead theater critic. And I love having him on. We always miss him when he's not here, but he's joining us tonight. How are you, Ro?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. It's wonderful to hear your voice as well.
It's great to hear your voice, too. I have missed you, and I hear about you. You know, I run into people, and they'll say, yeah, you know, Ro is on your show sometimes, and I just saw him at the show such and such a day. So I'm just happy that you're back with me tonight. I got to start out asking you about the shows that young children, I would say between the ages of 10 and up, that they can see that a lot of the parents don't want them to see, like Hamlet. My 10-year-old granddaughter just the other day asked me about Hamlet. She's been seeing all of these signs on buses and all this kind of thing. And she says, Auntie, Grandmother, I really want to see Hamlet. Would you advise that at 10 years old?
I think that's a hard one. The short answer is no. You know, I think Hamlet may be too much for a 10-year-old.
I agree.
The death scenes are pretty, you know, they're
pretty
moving.
Serious.
They're very moving. And so, you know, it's a mixed thing. Sometimes parents know their children better than we do, and they may have those conversations. My 10-year-old, I wouldn't take my 10-year-old to see that. So.
I agree with that. So then if that's the case, when it comes to Shakespeare, what shows can a 10-year-old see?
Well, you know, I think certainly the comedies, you know, Romeo and Juliet, of course, is still kind of heavy as well.
Right.
But A Midsummer Night's Dream is always delightful for young people.
Yeah, that is true. My son played that at his high school, St. Thomas Academy. I'll never forget it. They put it underwater. I wonder why people take that particular piece and change it all the time. There he was, you know, under, you know, like a one of the fish or something like that. I can't remember what he was dressed like, but it was ridiculous, I can tell you that. And they take it and run with that particular play, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah,
perfect. I will see if I can take her to that.
Yeah, that's a good one. And, you know, but I love the impulse, which is to, like, expose young people to this work and to have them own it and be at home in it, you know. Today I went to the Guthrie for their open house and celebration of their 60th anniversary, which is actually today. They were founded 1963 on May 7th is when they opened with Hamlet. And there was a tribute to Sheila Livingston, who brought a lot of
young
people to the Guthrie.
Oh,
and
I was so sorry to hear of her loss.
So it was really wonderful that we start this segment off talking about bringing Shakespeare, making Shakespeare available to young people, and making theater available to young people, because she's so deeply believed in that, you know?
Here's what I don't understand. No matter how famous Shakespeare's works are, I get frustrated when I go to see a different iteration of one of the most famous ones, right? And I get really frustrated because people like to play around with it and change it a bit. And in some way, in my head and heart, I think that is a sin. It's like, you know, don't change it that much, right? And then there are other times where I see something that Shakespeare has written and I've seen it on a stage somewhere and I go, but this was really cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they measure that.
You know, and so I went back. I didn't see Hamlet again this weekend, but I went back and on Thursday, there was a group that I talked to before they saw it, and we brought the dramaturg out. And we had the very question that you have, which is like, you know, like, how do you decide essentially to cut, you know, trim, what do you keep in? What? And the Guthrie, when it opened in 1963, the Hamlet lasted 4.5 hours. It was uncut. It was uncut.
And nobody got up to go to the restroom? Nothing? Really?
I know, but this Hamlet is about 2 hours and 2.5 hours plus intermission, you know?
Right.
So, that's a real question about, like, how do you do this? What choices do you make in terms of what characters to lose, what storylines to follow, what words from the past that maybe have taken on a different meaning today that you may not want to have. It's a rich, problematic and complicated project, frankly, because we keep these classics around because they're teaching us something, they're telling us something. On the other hand, sometimes, you know, we have to struggle or push through with some of the language or some of the concepts, some of the ideas, and certainly some of the characters. And one of the things too that's always a challenge is like, yeah, can we, if you're going to do Shakespeare, do all of it, and then, you know, are you going to be in the theater for 4.5 hours? You know?
Right. And, you know, I've been to long plays and it doesn't bother me when it's really just so powerful. But sometimes you look around the room, like at Orchestra Hall, they will take music and songs from these incredible pieces. And the children will be sitting there and whatever music is playing or if someone is singing the songs, and then you realize that you're talking about a piece that maybe the child should not see. but the parents have to make that decision. Right?
Exactly. And you know, I don't think there can be hard and fast rules about that because, you know, sometimes a 10-year-old may be fairly advanced
mature.
And they're able to have those discussions and, you know, and say, yeah, my child, and sometimes you know, a 13-year-old may not be ready. I don't know. I mean, it really depends, but I love the impulse, which is like, how do we immerse our young people in culture and show them all this different these different riches that they have,
right.
and say, this is yours, this is your birthright, this is yours to take advantage of, to learn from, to grow in citizenship, to grow in your humanity, frankly, you know.
I have a granddaughter that can handle it, and I know that. At 10 years old, she can handle that. But that 5-year-old of mine, I don't want her to handle it. It's like, no, not yet. You know? We know the children, right? We know our own children. We know the grandchildren. We know them. So, you know, you just kind of make that decision as quickly as you can because it's necessary.
And you know, in terms of the young people, I'm glad we're talking about them. An American Tale is at the Children's Theater.
Bravo.
It's fantastic. and really just heartwarming. It's a very clever show, and obviously it's animated. It's about mice escaping cats in Russia, and then they get here and they're like, there are no cats in America, but there are cats in America. And so it's like they have to negotiate and live in a world of challenges and sometimes unfairness. And so it's a beautiful, beautiful show. The set is a suitcase. So imagine the whole play takes place in a musical takes place in a suitcase, and that metaphor of travel, of transportation, of moving your belongings and moving your, you know, what is your home? You know, is it something that, is it a place or is it something that you carry, you know?
So who put it together as a musical? Do you know?
Yes.
At the Children's, who wrote it to life?
Muckler and Mahler is the team. They're the composers. And Itamar Moses does the book or the story. And I don't want to mispronounce her name, but Magar, I don't want to mispronounce her name, but she it's directed, very well directed by this young director who is actually directed at Guthrie as well. I'm going to try it.
Are you going to try it? Because I just want you to know I try this stuff all the time. It does not work well for me. It doesn't. So go, sir. Go. You have the magic.
So her name is Tahibi Magar. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Ooh, Tahibi Magar. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So she's Egyptian, American, and really, really does a wonderful job. And the choreography is by Katie Spellman. I should point that out too, because he actually does some group numbers. So also very fetching. It's a beautiful, beautiful production. Lots of there's a young man in it. I don't know his age, but he looks like he's still in primary elementary school, and he starred in it as the sort of the lead mouth, if you will. You know,
that's amazing.
And
you get a chance to do this. You get a chance to see these shows, and you can determine and write about if it's a great show or not a great show. Here's the thing, the challenge for me. Not every theater pushes out great pieces, but mm-hmm. most of them do really good work.
Right.
Right. And so I find myself going, okay, do I always need to go to this particular theater? Do I need to keep going there? Or what else am I missing? Who else am I missing? And I don't know where to look for the new theaters that are opening. Are there any that are opening now?
The short answer is, things are always bubbling and people are always pushing and experimenting. But, you know, what I've found is that there's a kind of a struggle that some people are doing really well and others are middling, in the same way that you have correctly noted that some shows are strong and others are mixed. And I'd say most are. Theatre Latida
has
done really well coming out of coming back and it's exceptional, and most other companies have not done as well. And so it's been mixed, and some companies are struggling and trying to figure out, you know, it's like, okay, how do we bring people back? How do we entice them? And how do we get back to where we were?
That's
a huge question. And it, you know, I was in a crowd today, and I started feeling a little claustrophobic. So I left, you know, because I didn't want it to be in a too big a crowd. And I think sometimes other people feel a similar way, you know.
Well, I tell you, I keep looking for new theaters, small theaters, middle-sized theaters. I keep looking at the ones that I keep going to, and I go, I should go more often. And now that, you know, spring and summer is around the corner, I'm just hoping that I will be able to find some new places to go and see their work. Because the work of theater is complicated, and it's a challenge often. Sometimes no, but oftentimes yes. Agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, you know, it really is rewarding. It's for not just for young people, although young people benefit greatly, because it really teaches you citizenship. It teaches you behavior. It teaches you all kinds of things. I have one story to share with you, and it's about Maya Angelou, the great.
Oh, we have to do that next Sunday. Can you join me next Sunday?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, I'm not playing with you, okay? I'm not playing with you, Rohan. Seriously, don't make me have to come over there and sit on your knees. Seriously. So I'm going to have to wrap it up tonight, but I am so happy to have you on tonight, and I'm really looking forward to the next time we're on together. So you take care of yourself, and don't forget that Maya Angelou story. I got one, too, okay?
Okay, all right. We'll talk soon.
All right, tell the family hello. All right, that's it, you guys. You're welcome. We are wrapping it up tonight, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you for sticking and staying with us right here at WCCO Radio. As many of you know, I love to end the night with something that matters, something that makes you feel better, brings a little peace to you. It's called Reignite the Soul. And the thought of the week for today is about faith. It says every single day things happen around us and for us that we can't explain or know how it happens, yet we trust it. We trust that a small device in our hands can connect us to anyone in the world. We trust that when we go to sleep, the sun will rise the next day. There is more happening for us than our senses can detect or our minds can know. Living would be impossible without some basic thing, like asking the question, how can we trust in something we can't define or see or understand? But then there's faith. Just because we can't see or feel our thoughts doesn't mean they aren't real. Just because we can't see or understand our creativity doesn't mean it's not real. Faith is how we explain what is felt in our intuition and our hearts, but may not make logical sense to our minds. Faith in something bigger than ourselves that help us through rough times gives us a sense of meaning and reminds us that we aren't alone. We are not alone. Remember that. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. Good night, everyone. I look forward to next Sunday with you. As many of you know, I love to end the night with something that matters, something that makes you feel better, brings a little peace to you. It's called Reignite the Soul. And the thought of the week for today is about faith. It says every single day things happen around us and for us that we can't explain or know how it happens, yet we trust it. We trust that a small device in our hands can connect us to anyone in the world. We trust that when we go to sleep, the sun will rise the next day. There is more happening for us than our senses can detect or our minds can know. Living would be impossible without some basic thing, like asking the question, how can we trust in something we can't define or see or understand? But then there's faith. Just because we can't see or feel our thoughts doesn't mean they aren't real. Just because we can't see or understand our creativity doesn't mean it's not real. Faith is how we explain what is felt in our intuition and our hearts, but may not make logical sense to our minds. Faith in something bigger than ourselves that help us through rough times gives us a sense of meaning and reminds us that we aren't alone. We are not alone. Remember that. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. Good night, everyone. I look forward to next Sunday with you.